This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
I mean, there's so many awful things that happen there all the time. All the time, like inhumane things. And I think that coddling something doesn't necessarily help it grow. Instead, I feel like criticizing something will. And that's what I try to do.
To the Hum.
So today, Gilad and I are joined by Zara Haider, who recently started a bit of a shitstorm in Pakistan by writing a very candid article for Vice. Zara is currently based in Toronto. And in the article, you openly discuss your sex life in Pakistan before you actually came to Canada at the age of 19. And there seems to be this gathering of weirdos on the internet who feel the need to kind of talk about this article. And we'll get to that. But first, I think both Gilad and I wanted to know, you know, we went to high school in Canada. You went to high school in Pakistan. How did you still get so much more ass than we did going to school here? It's just like, those are pretty good numbers. Those are like all-star numbers. I'm very curious as to how that happened. And like kind of a little bit upset at myself, frankly.
Well, I think it has something to do with the fact that, A, we don't really know about sex. We don't have sex education. We don't have the sex talk with our parents. So I feel like because it's this taboo topic in our culture, in our society, it makes it more exciting in a way. And we really want to experience it because it just seems like something we shouldn't. And I feel like that element adds a lot more excitement to it because, you know, it's shunned and we're not supposed to engage in it. For example, the elitist class, which I mentioned that I was a part of growing up there, we're very influenced by Western values and Western culture. And I feel like sex is a part of that. And because, you know, in our families, they'd allow us to drink at gatherings here and there. You know, they're very open in that sense. But when it came to sex or like having a boyfriend, you know, it would be quite hypocritical because they'd allow us to dress, you know, a little bit more openly than the rest of Pakistan. The rest of like Pakistani society. But when it came to things like sex and hanging out with boys, it was like, no.
A huge no-no.
Exactly. So I feel like that just made it more exciting in a way.
Yeah, well, your article says that, this is like a mind-blowing stat to me, but like Pakistan is the like highest porn-watching population in the world, according right. to some sources. And do you think that's because of what you were talking about? And that this sort of like, because it's so taboo, because there's such mm-hmm. a repression there, that people are kind of taking to the internet to sort of find release, so to speak?
I think so, yes. I believe so. Because, I mean, obviously, sex is a natural human thing to do. You know, it's something that two human beings engage in, and we need that, you know, release, we need that connection. And I feel like when we can't obtain it, we have to sort of find other ways to achieve the same feeling. And I suppose masturbating and watching porn is one of those ways. And I have received a lot of backlash for that statistic. Apparently, I didn't do my research correctly. And according to Pornhub, someone shared this information with me, according to Pornhub, Pakistan isn't even listed in the top 40 countries of highest porn watching rates via Pornhub. But there is something that people should also acknowledge in Pakistan, is that regardless of that, perhaps I was wrong about that, but we have YouTube banned. YouTube is banned in Pakistan. You need to access it using a proxy server or a VPN. And I feel like a lot of people would use that with porn too, and that's not traced, obviously. And the other thing is that, you know, it's a known fact that we have these infamous DVDs that people also use to watch. And because of load shedding and all these things, we don't really have access to the internet as much as we would to just a DVD. We could pop into our DVD player and sort of just watch it.
So you write this article for Vice. Mm-hmm. A fucking shitstorm hits everywhere. I've read somewhere that this is one of the most talked about things in Pakistan. My question, before you write that article and you put it out, do you hesitate at all? Are you able to predict that any of this is about to happen, and does it scare you?
To be honest, when I wrote the article and, you know, when I was submitting it to Vice, I obviously had an idea of the consequences. I knew that people would be upset. I knew that people would be extremely supportive because, you know, I've given them a voice that they've been unable to use for a very long time. during, you know, the course of their young adolescence in Pakistan. And of course, I knew that, you know, there would be controversy. There would be more religious figures being upset over this. But I did not know that it would cause this much of a shitstorm, to be completely honest.
What's maybe the most surprising thing you've heard?
There have been a few things, I suppose. A few accusations, you know, conspiracy theories that I'm an Indian spy. yeah, that was really funny. Contrary to popular belief, I'm actually, you know...
Hold on, but one sec. An Indian spy doing what?
I don't know. An Indian spy just trying to shame Pakistan, just to destroy...
Trying to sex up the Pakistani kids.
Through Vice. Yeah. Through Vice.
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah. That's one of the ridiculous things I've heard. Other things include... I was a classmate of Maryam Nawaz, who's the prime minister of Pakistan's daughter, which I, frankly speaking, don't recall at all. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'm not sure where that came from. But they've made like a little image of it and everything with my photo and her photo. And in Urdu, they've written, oh, she's something. It's a political theory, conspiracy theory, basically.
So it must be real. I'm looking at my Indian co-host, Amar, here, looking for any validity to any of this.
No, this whole thing is, it's to kind of gauge just how big this got. I'm looking at your Twitter feed right now, and can I ask how many Twitter followers you had before the Vice article hit?
I had 60.
Okay, I'm looking at yours right now. I'm going to scroll up. You currently have 8,404 followers.
Which is about 8,400 more than Amar's got.
Yes, but that's a very low bar if we're going by me. But you went from 60 to 8,400 in the span of what? How long did that take?
About 5 days.
Jeez. And like, is this something you're worried about? Like this newfound attention that you're receiving? Are you worried that like, you know, you're a writer too. Like this scrutiny that you're under, most of it's coming from a negative place. But is there personal kind of feelings attached to all of these people now paying attention to everything you're doing and writing?
Yes and no. I mean, if my articles proved anything, I'm going to be as honest as possible as a writer. I can't help that people will be upset or that people will praise me for what I've written. I think the most important thing as a writer is to be relatable. And, you know, that's what I tried to achieve. And I did, you know, I received a lot of support from a lot of people. And of course, I also received a lot of backlash, but I feel like when you receive, you know, negative comments and when you receive hateful comments, I feel like you've done something right in a way. You've made an impression. And regardless of how many people are going to be scrutinizing me, I'm still going to be as honest as I possibly can in whatever way.
That's amazing. And some of that acceptance comes in the form of Bina Shah, who had a great article for you. Was it on, what was the name of that website?
It was on Dawn News.
Right. So, and tons and tons of awful backlash. Do you have anything you want to, a response to any of that or?
Regarding the Bina Shah article, I mean, it has been removed now. She mentioned it was because of copyright issues. It was being posted without her permission on other websites. I feel like what she said is, I mean, she said it from a very diplomatic point of view, but she also gave me kudos for being honest and for writing something that she herself wouldn't have been able to say. There was also an article by Moni Mohsen on Times of India that, again, you know, she's also a Pakistani writer, and she applauded my bravery. And I mean, of course, everybody's going to be diplomatic about it. I mean, in terms of writing about it, and that's totally fine. I completely appreciate that. And I appreciate that they have applauded my bravery too.
You brought up Times of India as one. So when we were doing some research, we saw that a lot of South Asian media has picked up this story, including the backlash mm-hmm. and the support, but it doesn't seem to be getting the same attention here from the Western media. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel like the article itself in the Western media, I mean, I did have a few people, like non-Pakistanis, non-South Asians, you know, they appreciated the article because it gave them some sort of insight on how things work back there and how it affects people who move to the West, like South Asians who've moved to the West. It helped them understand them a bit more. I received messages that said things along those lines. But I feel like, in a way, it's not as shocking over here because culturally it's not a taboo topic.
It's not a story here.
It's not a story here. Exactly. It is a story, however, back home, of course. But here, I feel like it's viewed as something that's normal.
This is Nihal on BBC Asian Network.
Let's get into this story, the unmarried Pakistani woman who wrote about her sex life. As you can imagine, people have had a lot to say about this on social media. Zara Haider's story has been shared thousands of times across the internet, sparked a debate about Asian women talking openly about their sex lives. Simanpreet, what would you like to ask Zara?
Well, after reading your article, I feel that you've written it just to kind of make your point that, you know, the men are doing it, why can't the women? I don't really understand. It's not about culture. I don't think it's about your culture in any way. I think you've basically made it about, you know, women can't do it, men can. Why, you know, it's unfair just because men have a patriarchal role in our society that it's unfair.
Yes, that was definitely what I was attempting to do. It is unfair.
So can we talk a little bit about what's in the article? Can you tell us a little bit about your experience as a young person in Pakistan and what it's like to kind of deal with sexuality as you get older, and what it's like for some of the other kids that are currently living there now, based on your experience?
Well, I feel like, I mean, it is exciting, of course, the sneaking around and the, you know, having to park in like a deserted alleyway and hook up with someone. It is exciting for sure. And I feel like, well, most of the schools that I went to were all girls' schools. And for me, I find that when I went to a co-educational school, there was less sexual tension in a way. And I feel like in an all-girls school, you know, we were excited to kind of, you know, see boys from the boys' branch or, you know, stuff like that. So it kind of made us want to hang out with boys out of school more in a way, because we wanted to experience what it was like, and that obviously led to, you know, getting more intimate and kind of having to sneak around, of course, because, you know, we couldn't have a boy over, you know, unless your parents were more open-minded, which there are, you know, there are parents who are okay with, you know, their daughters hanging out with boys and stuff. But for the majority of us, it's not really, especially during like puberty, like pubescent years, it's not really acceptable, I suppose. And hence we'd have to sneak around. It was really like an adrenaline rush, I suppose, like having to get home before curfew, but, you know, you're in the car with like your boyfriend or whatever, and, you know, your parents can't see you, and, you know, your security guard can't see you, and your domestic staff can't see you, so you have to like...
You have to sneak past security to do
that. Oh, yeah, because like most of us have security, like security guards outside of our houses.
Right.
So your partner would have to like drop you like outside of your street.
In camouflage gear.
Exactly. It was very exciting, to be honest. And yeah, a few other things that I did mention was the hotel rooms. I'm also receiving backlash for that, apparently, because not everyone can afford a $150 hotel room. And of course, there are like guest houses over there. But again, I was speaking from my personal experience, who, you know, did date guys who were in my sort of social circle, and yes, they could afford $150 hotel rooms per night, and that's just something that we had to do if we didn't really, you know, have a choice. We didn't have a choice.
You mentioned in the article too that there was an office that had a bedroom connected to it. How the hell do I get one of those?
So in Pakistan, I mean, if you come from a family that has more money, I guess, you either like, it's very common to have like a farmhouse or to have a second house that no one really lives in, a guest house, I suppose. Or, you know, I did hook up with a guy whose father's office had a bedroom inside of it that I don't know why. I don't know if he was using it for, you know, other purposes. I have no idea why it was there. But I mean, there was a bedroom, there was a living room, and yeah, it was pretty convenient, to say the least.
You, like you say, it's exciting and all that, and I could imagine it would be, but I also imagine that eventually it would just start to get annoying, that you have to jump through all these hurdles and sneak away past all these people to be able to engage in something that we all agree is very human.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. I can completely relate to what you're saying. However, after a while, it's just a norm, you know. I grew up with my half aunt. You know, she's like 8 years older than me. And when I was a kid, I was her accomplice in helping her sneak out to meet her boyfriends. And I was an ally, sort of, you know. yeah, so I would help her do that. You know, I would see her friends like sneaking out, etc. And then when it came to my friends and I, when we were around that age, we started doing the same things too, because it's just how it is. And we're conditioned to think that this is just how it's going to be. So we just continue doing it. And we don't really know that it should be okay for us to be able to sit on a couch and hang out with, you know, our boyfriend if we're like 16 or something. It's just not like that.
Mm.
So we're talking a little bit about the sneaking around and some of the exciting parts of it, but there are real consequences for particularly the young women when they get caught, right? Can you talk about what some of the consequences are for young couples that actually do get caught having sex?
So I did mention in my article an example of my grandfather beating my aunt's boyfriend with a golf club. And that, I feel like that does happen to other people as well, where they either catch them sneaking in and they kind of just get very physical, very aggressive, and they cause a shitstorm in that situation. Other things would include, I mean, people have been stopped over by the police. And again, I'm not talking about the entire police force in Pakistan. However, it is very common to be able to bribe policemen in that case. So, you know, if they do catch you engaging in, you know, premarital sex, you know, in a car or, in, you know, publicly, they, you know, they will threaten to take you to jail, etc. But if you are from an influential family and you throw your family name or you offer to pay them, I don't know, like maybe like 5,000 rupees or roughly around there, which is about, it's not a lot in dollars. I can't convert right now, but it's not a lot. You know, they'll let you go. And it's happened many times to me personally. It's happened when we've had like alcohol in the car, when we've had hash in the car. It's happened. And it's so easy to get. I've been sitting on a guy's lap in the car and we basically just paid the cop off and they let us go.
Why did you feel the need to qualify that the way you did? Were people actually trying to deny that there's corruption within the police force in Islamabad?
Yeah, they were. Actually, they were.
Really?
Yeah. So hence, I feel the need to state that you're wrong. And we all know that it is a heavily corrupted country in many ways.
I moved to Canada from India when I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I obviously have a lot of memories, but I have several distinct memories of my family members bribing police officers. So anyone who wants to talk about South Asians and corruption within police forces or say that there isn't any, just shut the fuck up.
Honestly, right? It's true.
So what is your status in Canada now? Are you here on a student visa? Are you planning on sticking around in Toronto for a little while? I guess what I'm getting to is, are you going back to Pakistan anytime soon?
I'm actually a Canadian citizen. That's something else I wanted to clarify, because a lot of people have been accusing me of trying to seek asylum by writing this article.
Okay,
sorry, you were an Indian spy.
I gotta break this plan down. So the plan is, you move here, you write an article for Vice about your sexual history
as an Indian spy,
and then use that as a way to get Canadian citizenship
and Twitter followers.
And Twitter followers.
Basically, that's what people are accusing me
of. You are a master criminal.
Yep.
I must say.
That's what I am. Apparently. No, I am a Canadian citizen. My mother was actually born and raised here, hence I'm Canadian. I've never been here until I moved here when I was 19. I do plan on staying in Toronto, but I don't plan on going back to Pakistan anytime soon. I was actually just there. I went to visit in at the end of December, but I don't plan on going back anytime soon, even though I'm not afraid of what people have been saying to me. It doesn't really make me feel like I don't belong in, you know, the country that I'm originally from. I don't think that that's fair. But I definitely don't plan on moving back there. I do plan on staying in Toronto. I also grew up in Dubai for a bit, and I do have my mom who lives in Dubai, so.
How has your family reacted to this?
Well, so my mom is very supportive. She's more open-minded, I suppose. So she's very supportive. She thinks that I created a much-needed dialogue and that I was brutally honest. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we need sometimes, especially in a culture and a society that doesn't really condone honesty in that sense. And my paternal uncle has also been very supportive. He's also slightly more open-minded than the rest of my family, and he's kind of been talking to my Twitter trolls, you know, tweeting my Twitter trolls, kind of telling them to back off. However, the rest of my family has not been very supportive, so yeah.
Was there a concern on your part at all that the way Western audiences would kind of read your piece and sort of it would sort of add to some of the negative stereotypes about Pakistan and Pakistani culture that already kind of exists there. Was that something that kind of was on your mind as you wrote the article at all?
Yes and no. I mean, I obviously knew that I was shedding a negative light on it. But in my opinion, I think that it does require a lot of improvement in many ways. I mean, if people are going to have a negative opinion based on what I wrote, I don't speak on the behalf of the entire Pakistani population. That's insane. I can't do that. But I mean, I can't help it. I am being honest about this specific thing. And I mean, of course, there are great things about my culture too. However, this is something that is a bit more negative in that sense. And I can't help but be honest.
So tell us about some of the positive feedback you've gotten from young people, particularly those in Pakistan. It's very easy to see all of the negativity that comes out on Twitter and all of the Twitter eggs kind of start to troll you a little bit. But what have been some of the positive messages you've received?
So I've received a lot of thank yous, a lot of, you know, you've nailed it. You're so relatable. Your story has been so relatable to a lot of us. And, you know, it's so refreshing to see somebody talking about something that has never been talked about. That's kind of just rejected as a thought. And all of my friends from Pakistan completely support me. And I guess that's because in a way that they know me and they know my intentions, whereas all these random people on Twitter don't. And, you know, that's completely fair. But I have received a lot of emails from people, you know, long emails saying, you know, thank you. I can't thank you enough for this.
From anything you've seen, has it inspired other women who are currently living in Pakistan to open up about some of their own experiences that relate to this?
I feel like perhaps not yet. I still don't think, because I am the first Pakistani woman to do this, I feel like I have motivated people in a way, because, you know, I've had a lot of people publicly, you know, tweet me and say, you know, I support you fully. And I feel like that's a big step in itself, because if, you know, someone is to support someone in that sense, in something that's receiving so much backlash from Pakistani media, I feel like letting their friends and family know that they're actually supporting me is a big step in a way. I even had somebody message me on Facebook and they were like, oh, I shared your article on my wall and, you know, it was amazing and thank you so much for writing this. And initially I was thinking of, you know, limiting my profile so that, you know, the judgmental aunties wouldn't judge me. But then I was like, fuck it, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm still going to post it anyway because, you know, it's just so great.
Is most of the backlash coming from the male population, out of curiosity?
I think so. I believe so. Yes. I do think that I am receiving a lot of backlash because I have made Pakistani men look bad.
It's so ridiculous, though, because men were involved in this as well. Mm-hmm. And we're putting all the blame here on you, which is so silly.
Well, it's because I'm a woman. And I mean, I can't deny that Pakistan, it is a misogynistic society. You know, our laws itself are misogynistic. I mean, they drop the Hudud ordinance, which is where if a woman gets raped, she needs four male witnesses. But they still practice that in, you know, lots of Muslim Middle Eastern countries, you know.
You need four male witnesses?
You need four male witnesses. They actually do this in the UAE and in Gulf countries. If a woman gets raped and she goes to the police, she either needs the rapist to come forward, the man who raped her, or she needs four male witnesses who witnessed the rape to come forward.
So in the history, how many of these cases actually end up getting, it seems like an impossible situation.
From what I know, in Dubai itself, there were two expat women who went through this, and they, of course, you know, it just didn't happen. So they were put into jail for fornication outside of marriage.
Sex before marriage. We all know that sex is something that is pleasurable. It feels good.
Sex before marriage. I would agree with it.
We think you should wait till the marriage.
Something is special.
I think it's okay because, you know, some people don't want to get married.
Well, if grandma was watching, I'd say no.
I think it's actually a good idea to determine sexual compatibility with the partner.
You can't go into a basketball game before you warm up, so how do you go into a marriage without warming up?
If you take the appropriate countermeasures to prevent STIs and things, then I think go for it. Why not?
Living here in Toronto, has any part of our sexual culture here surprised you? Because even though we are a lot more liberal, there still is quite a lot of slut shaming that goes on and stigma around that. Can you elaborate on maybe any of the surprises you had here in Toronto, maybe with the Canadian culture at large, but also maybe within the Pakistani Canadian community too?
Initially, when I came here, I did face a bit of culture shock. You know, when I was on Yonge Street and I saw that there was a sex shop next to a mosque, that kind of, you know, creeped me out a bit in a way. Because I wasn't used to that. I wasn't used to seeing that growing up in Islamabad and in Dubai. So I was a bit confused about that. Also because I was just generally confused about my sexuality, and because I had experienced sex, but I had experienced it in a sort of like shameful kind of manner. I mean, back home, I was, you know, slut-shamed for smoking a cigarette or for drinking alcohol. But no, I haven't really faced any sort of slut-shaming by non-Pakistanis. However, I found that Pakistanis who were raised here, I'm not sure why, I feel like there are some who haven't really assimilated into the sort of open general culture that is here in Canada. And I feel like I also received somewhat harsh judgments from them in a way for being a certain way.
Are you hoping that this article you've written, I think it's pretty clear that it started a conversation in Pakistan, but it's, I guess it remains to be seen where this conversation goes. But are you hoping that Canadian Pakistanis will also start to talk about this?
Yes, I am hoping that, I have received backlash from Pakistanis in Canada. The Toronto taxi cab Twitter tweeted me, like, basically, you know, something not very nice. And
sorry, say that again.
The Toronto taxi cab, I think that's what it's called, they tweeted me, and I feel like it's run by Pakistanis. I'm not sure.
What does this have
to
do with
cabs? Is that an organization or like a specific Toronto taxi driver?
It's called Toronto Taxi Cab on Twitter.
Okay, we got to look this up.
Yeah, probably.
Because it's like they've got a big enough fight with Uber.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's leave Zara alone.
Yeah.
Right. I just love that this all of a sudden has something to do with taxis now.
Great. Yeah, we had a conversation about Pakistanis in Toronto and it had to end with cab drivers.
Oh my
just
God.
Perfect.
Not,
and way to go, Zara. We had to take it there.
I didn't even go there.
Yeah, so I do hope so, because, I mean, it's completely different over here. It's not viewed the same. Sex is definitely not viewed the same way over here that it is over there. And, I mean, I have nothing against people who don't want to assimilate into the general culture of a country, for example. But I just feel like Canadian Pakistanis have some sort of an identity crisis at some point. Not all of them, of course, but I definitely did. And, you know, I didn't even grow up here, so I can't imagine what it would be like to, you know, have your immigrant parents influence you in a way, but then you're around all of these different sort of, you know, I guess, Western values. And you grow up kind of confused in a way, because I have spoken to Canadian Pakistani friends about this, and they've tried to, you know, hold on to religion. They've tried to practice certain things. They've tried not to drink, etc. And some have successfully done it, and some have, you know, maintained, you know, those religious values, and, you know, hats off to them for doing that. But then I also have Canadian Pakistani friends who've, you know, found it very difficult and have had different sort of perspectives on things and tried to be religious for the sake of their parents, but then eventually couldn't be religious, or they were gay and they couldn't tell their parents and they feel ashamed, and, you know, they're just stuck in the closet and forever, for eternity, basically, because they just can't tell their parents because they would disown them, or they would never speak to them, or they would just be so upset that their, you know, daughter, for example, won't marry a man and have children with him. And, you know, it's very limiting to somebody's growth in that sense. And it happens in Pakistan too. I have gay friends in Pakistan, and they're just so afraid of coming out because they would just be shamed so badly for it. And it's just so, so saddening to me.
Sort of interesting, this double life a lot of immigrant children have to face when they live here. I can totally relate to that as well. My family moved here from Israel, and they wanted all of these things from me as well, dating a Jewish girl. My mom at some point still has a hard time with me putting, like, eating pork or putting cheese on meat, and it's like I have to have this one life at home, but then I have the culture that I'm living in. And in some ways, it's like, what did you expect when you moved here? We're in a new place with a new culture. So sort of, Mar, have you ever experienced anything like that yourself?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I moved here when I was 11, which is kind of a tricky time for a young person, because I wasn't young enough to sort of just feel Canadian right away, but I wasn't so sort of like my Indian side wasn't so deeply rooted in me that I wasn't capable of losing some of it. So things like my accent went away right away and those kinds of things. And when you're young, you just want to fit in, right? So being different kind of sucks, and you just want to assimilate as quickly as possible. And so you do things that you kind of regret down the road, like I wish I'd spoken my language for longer, and Hindi had kind of stuck around within me somewhere. And I'm still hoping I'll kind of relearn it one day. But stuff like that, yeah, definitely happens because you're kind of caught between two cultures in that way. I think that's something a lot of people in this city in particular can relate to.
In Pakistan, it's actually the same thing, which people don't seem to understand, because when immigrants come here and people make fun of their accents or et cetera, whatever, in whatever way they can sort of, you know, make them feel like an anomaly in an awful way. The same thing happens over there. I grew up in Dubai for my first, like, I don't know, until I was about 8 years old. And then I moved back to Pakistan and I went to an English school. So I had a very heavy British accent, and I didn't speak Urdu at all back then. So everyone made fun of me. Everyone called me a burger.
A burger?
Yeah. That's basically what you call like a brown kid who acts like a white kid. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, they called me a burger. They used to bully me for speaking in a different way and for having an English accent as a brown kid. And, you know, they'd speak in Urdu around me and they'd talk badly about me. They'd bitch about me in Urdu. And I'd kind of just feel so alienated in the country that I'm from. So it's just insane. And I feel like whenever you're an outsider in any sort of community, even if it's your own, they'll still, you know, make you feel excluded. And to me, that's just insane. And I feel like sex is relevant in that sense over there, especially because it's just, it's a basic thing that human beings do. And I don't think that, you know, shunning it is acceptable in any way.
The sex thing is a real thing, right? Like, I remember my parents were also very liberal. And, you know, my mom would let me have a swig of beer every once in a while when I was young. And, like, they were totally cool with my friends. And as soon as, like, you know, we'd be watching TV or a movie and a kind of a sex scene came on, it'd be like, whoa, like, my mom's hands would go right over my eyes as though, like, I couldn't figure out what was coming next, or, like, I didn't know what was about to happen on screen. So it was like sex has always been this separate kind of thing for South Asians, I think, that no matter how liberal you get, sex is still the one thing that South Asian parents seem to not want their kids to talk about. And it leads to all these problems, which is why I think you're seeing the shitstorm that you're seeing now with your article. It's like you've just a whole shitload of South Asian parents are just like, what the fuck?
This happens?
So I guess I'm just curious if you want to, if you could speak to the people who are criticizing you in Pakistan now, but also the young people who are secretly reading your article and going, yes, thank you. What do you want to say about what you wrote and some of the backlash you've been receiving? If you could speak to those people directly right now, what do you feel like saying?
Well, to the people who, you know, can resonate with what I've written, who are supporting me, you know, I'm very grateful. I'm very appreciative that I could resonate with them, that I could connect with them on that level where they don't feel alienated in that sense. And, you know, I'm very happy that I've managed to, you know, be a voice in a way for those people. And as far as the people who are hating on me are concerned, everyone's entitled to their own opinions, and I can't condemn them for having their own opinions against my piece, but they should know that this is my personal experience, but also the personal experience of many other people. And I think that it's shameful that all they're focusing on is, you know, the fact that I had sex with almost a dozen men and other things like, oh, nobody went down on me, you know, when I'm trying to, you know, I used my personal experience as an example, but I'm trying to get to a larger point, which is that we do need more awareness around the subject because people do it, because I have had friends who've had to self-abort in secrecy, and I have had friends, I know people who've overdosed on emergency contraceptive, and I know people who've had to rush women to the hospital, you know, their female friends to the hospital for having to self-abort, for using tangible objects to do so, and they were sick for days, for weeks, and you know what, it's just something that we need to address, I think. And if you're going to be hateful about it, that's okay. But eventually, I hope that you realize it is something that needs to be talked about. It is something that we need to be educated on, whether it's premarital or postmarital, it doesn't matter. It's something that we need to know.